So tonight the canto is called The Adoration of the Divine Mother. One might imagine that this is the expression of the central theme of the yoga of Sri Aurobindo. Therefore, this canto is particularly important. Everyone's invited to make themselves comfortable in here. You can lean against the wall or whatever you like. There are extra pillows around. I think that it's that. I think that it's particularly important, and I think that it is expressive of the central theme of the yoga of Sri Aurobindo. I think it is a kind of ultimate statement. Could you move just a little bit to the one side? I think it is, let's say, a penultimate statement. In English, that means not quite the ultimate statement, but very close to it. The absolute necessity and profoundest significance of the idea of surrender. You ask 100 different people what this surrender is all about, and you'll get 100 different vague answers. But Sri Aurobindo, I think, makes it extremely clear and explicit. And yet it's a very difficult movement to grasp integrally and to practice. In this canto, I think we have Sri Aurobindo's penultimate statement of the meaning of the word, or the idea, or the movement. And yet this canto is quite short, and if you read it, I mean, you can easily read it in the same amount of time that you read the main sections of the newspaper, and you can read it in the same way. It's quite simply stated. It's easy to read. And I think that if you read it in that way, you won't have a clue what he's talking about. I tried it yesterday. It's deceptively simple, let's say. And so when we render this canto as a mantra and in the spirit of practice, we have to perform this Vedic sacrifice. We have to make this an expression of our call and our complete self-giving. It comes from the void. And so the first movement of that self-giving is a total, total, absolute self-giving. And this canto really only speaks to us when we've done that. Or it speaks to us most clearly and profoundly when we've done that. And so one could say, I could say, that it reminds me of the Dalai Lama's comment when he was giving a yoga teaching, that this teaching that he was giving had not previously been shared publicly, and that normally it required 3 years of rigorous practice and 6 weeks to render. And he was doing it in 3 days for a lay audience. And he said, because now those who are ready for this can have it. It can be offered, this secret teaching. It's called Dzogchen. And that means the spontaneous arising of the clear light mind. But the spontaneous arising of the clear light mind comes after 3 years of rigorous practice and takes 6 weeks to hear the direct transmission. And I, as you know, I happen to believe that there are many similarities between that tradition of transmission and what Savitri is all about. And because the theme from last time especially, but recurring throughout Savitri, is the theme of the void as an ultimate realization of the presence of the divine, through which and in which the new consciousness can emerge. I would like to mention again a connection with highest yoga tantra in Buddhism. Sri Aurobindo says in The Life Divine, in a very early chapter, the non-being permits the being. Even as the silence permits the activity. Capital S, capital A. By this simultaneous negation and affirmation, not mutually destructive, but complementary to each other, like all contraries, the simultaneous awareness of conscious self-being as a reality and the unknowable beyond as the same reality . The simultaneous awareness of conscious self-being as a reality and the unknowable beyond as the same reality becomes realizable to the awakened human soul. Thus was it possible for the Buddha to attain the state of nirvana and yet act puissantly in the world. Impersonal in his inner consciousness, in his action, the most powerful personality that we know of as having lived and produced results upon earth. For we find that this nirvana, this self-extinction, while it gives an absolute peace and freedom to the soul within, is yet consistent in practice with a desireless but effective action without. This possibility of an entire motionless impersonality and void calm doing outwardly the works of the eternal verities, love, truth, righteousness, was perhaps the real gist of the Buddha's teaching. This superiority to ego and to the chain of personal workings and to the identification with mutable form and idea, not the petty ideal of an escape from the trouble and suffering of the physical birth. Thus, after reconciling spirit and matter in the cosmic consciousness, we perceive the reconciliation in the transcendental consciousness of the final assertion of all and its negation. So this thing called transformation of consciousness is a very subtle change from perceiving everything outwardly through the senses and the mental impressions to perceiving everything inwardly. Without sensations and mental impressions. By another self, another instrumentation, another faculty, another energetic some other consciousness than sensations and impressions and thoughts. So I think it's very subtle, and I believe this canto is telling us exactly how that subtle change happens. He's trying to catch it. And it's not in the lines of the canto. And you don't catch it by reading each line and reflecting upon it and each page. Somehow it's not there. It has to come through us, through a process of sacrifice. And that can happen in many ways, under many circumstances. But it takes time. That active intention must persevere for as long as it takes. Sri Aurobindo sometimes says, it may take 10 years or it may take 10 lifetimes. In many cantos, there is an expression of how activity in the world can take place from that position of being, non-being, absolute calm. There are many descriptions of how that can take place, especially in the Book of Yoga, which is the Yoga of Savitri. In the Yoga of Aswapati, this transition takes place after all of this practice and is the transition into identification with the Supreme, of course. And as I said, in the next canto that we'll read, it is also into an experience of the psychic being totally in front and the perception of the world from that consciousness, but also into an ultimate compassion for humanity and the world. And that is expressed in the last canto in the cycle, which is the one following next. The work, the final work, is that work of compassion. And so what is the difference between the Buddhist teaching and this one? In the agenda, the mother says in a couple of places something like, "Now I understand that this Buddhist teaching is something that has to be learned and realized, but not as a final step, in order to take the next step. But it didn't make possible the taking of that next step. Because it didn't bring that particular, that special connection into reach, into the reach of mortal consciousness. And so, you know, historically, psychologically, we can reflect that, you know, perhaps humanity wasn't ready, perhaps it was necessary to have that teaching first, whatever. The fact is that Sri Aurobindo is conveying the spirit and power of that teaching as a passage to something very specific, which we might call the yoga of Sri Aurobindo. When I comment on Upanishad, or Gita, I try to emphasize that this is Sri Aurobindo. This is not really Upanishad or Gita per se. It's what Sri Aurobindo calls the synthesis of yoga is how the movements of yoga can be utilized for this particular change of consciousness, not how they've been utilized and not for the realizations of the past. And so they aren't really translations and they aren't really commentaries. They are vehicles that, like the emptiness, like the void, they are vehicles for a passage and for the entry of a power that is different. So Nachiketas learns the teaching of yoga from death. In the Kena Upanishad, Katha Upanishad. And that's a necessary realization. And most of the Savitri up to now has been about that. And for Savitri, it continues to be about that. But it's not for the realization, it's for the transformation of death, the transformation of spiritual consciousness. Spirit, you know, spiritual consciousness means a lot of different things. And so this idea of spiritual consciousness is this unique combination of the teachings and the lessons and the realizations of yoga in order for something else to happen. So in a way, they're all still valid. And in a way, they're just stepping stones or tools for something specific that's different. So we're trying to learn what that is. And we're allowing Savitri, the word, Savitri, the silence, Savitri, the golden bridge, to bring us into the realm of that possibility, out of whatever we are, into whatever that is. A stillness absolute, incommunicable, meets the sheer self-discovery of the soul. A wall of stillness shuts it from the world. A gulf of stillness swallows up the sense and makes unreal all that mind has known, all that the laboring senses still would weave, prolonging an imaged unreality. Self's vast spiritual silence occupies space. Only the inconceivable is left. Only the nameless, without space and time. Abolished is the burdening need of life. Thought falls from us. We cease from joy and grief. The ego is dead. We are freed from being and care. We have done with birth and death and work and fate. O soul, it is too early to rejoice. Thou hast reached the boundless silence of the self. Thou hast leaped into a glad, divine abyss. But where hast thou thrown self's mission and self's power? On what dead bank on the eternal's road? One was within thee who was self and world. What hast thou done for his purpose in the stars? Escape brings not the victory and the crown. Something thou camest to do from the unknown, but nothing is finished, and the world goes on, because only half God's cosmic work is done. Only the everlasting no has neared and stared into thy eyes and killed thy heart. But where is the lover's everlasting yes? And immortality in the secret heart? The voice that chants to the Creator fire. The symboled Om. The great assenting word. The bridge between the rapture and the calm. The passion and the beauty of the bride. The chamber where the glorious enemies kiss. The smile that saves. The golden peak of things. This too is truth at the mystic fount of life. A black veil has been lifted. We have seen the mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. But who has lifted up the veil of light? And who has seen the body of the King? The mystery of God's birth and acts remains, leaving unbroken the last chapter's seal. unsolved, the riddle of the unfinished play. The cosmic player laughs within his mask, and still the last inviolate secret hides behind the human glory of a form, behind the gold eidolon of a name. A large white line has figured as a goal, but far beyond the ineffable sun tracks blaze. What seemed the source and end was a wide gate. A last bare step into eternity. An eye has opened upon timelessness. Infinity takes back the forms it gave. And through God's darkness or his naked light, his million rays return into the sun. There is a zero sign of the supreme. Nature left nude and still uncovers God. But in her grandiose nothingness, all is there. When her strong garbs are torn away from us, the soul's ignorance is slain, but not the soul. The zero covers an immortal face, a high and blank negation is not all, a huge extinction is not God's last word. Life's ultimate sense, the close of being's course, the meaning of this great mysterious world. In absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. Awaking, it can wake the trance-bound soul and in the ray reveal the parent sun. It can make the world a vessel of spirit's force. It can fashion in the clay God's perfect shape. To free the self is but one radiant pace. Here to fulfill himself was God's desire. Even while he stood on being's naked edge, and all the passion and seeking of his soul faced their extinction in some featureless vast. The presence he yearned for suddenly drew close. Across the silence of the ultimate calm, out of a marvelous transcendence's core, a body of wonder and translucency, as if a sweet mystic summary of herself escaping into the original bliss had come enlarged out of eternity. Someone came infinite and absolute. Even as a mother draws her child to her arms, took to her breast nature and world and soul. Abolishing the signless emptiness, breaking the vacancy and voiceless hush, piercing the limitless unknowable into the liberty of the motionless depths, a beautiful and felicitous luster stole. The power, the light, the bliss, no word can speak, imaged itself in a surprising beam and built a golden passage to his heart, touching through him all longing, sentient things. A moment's sweetness of the all-beautiful cancelled the vanity of the cosmic whirl. A nature throbbing with a heart divine was felt in the unconscious universe. It made the breath a happy mystery, a love that bore the cross of pain with joy. You demonized the sorrow of the world. Made happy the weight of long, unending time. The secret caught of God's felicity. Affirming in life a hidden ecstasy, it held the spirit to its miraculous course, carrying immortal values to the hours. It justified the labor of the sun. For one was there supreme behind the God. A mother might brooded upon the world. A consciousness revealed its marvelous front, transcending all that is, denying none. Imperishable above our fallen heads, he felt a rapturous and unstumbling force. The undying truth appeared, the enduring power of all that here is made and then destroyed. The mother of all Godheads and all strengths, who, mediatrix, binds earth to the supreme. The enigma ceased that rules our nature's night. The covering nescience was unmasked and slain. Its mind of error was stripped off from things, and the dull moods of its perverting will. Illumined by her all-seeing identity, knowledge and ignorance could strive no more. No longer could the Titan opposites, antagonist poles of the world's artifice, impose the illusion of their twofold screen, throwing their figures between us and her. The wisdom was near. Disguised by its own works, of which the darkened universe is the robe, no more existence seemed an aimless fall. Extinction was no more the sole release. The hidden word was found. The long-sought clue. Revealed was the meaning of our spirit's birth, condemned to an imperfect body and mind in the inconscience of material things and the indignity of mortal life. A heart was felt in the spaces wide and bare. A burning love. From white spiritual founts annulled the sorrow of the ignorant depths. Suffering was lost in her immortal smile. A life from beyond grew conqueror here of death. To err no more was natural to mind. Wrong could not come where all was light and love. The formless and the formed were joined in her. Immensity was exceeded by a look, a face revealed the crowded infinite. Incarnating inexpressibly in her limbs, the boundless joy the blind world forces seek. her body of beauty mooned the seas of bliss. At the head she stands, of birth and toil and fate. In their slow round, the cycles turn to her call. Alone, her hands can change time's dragon base. Hers is the mystery the night conceals. The spirit's alchemist energy is hers. She is the golden bridge, the wonderful fire, the luminous heart of the unknown is she. A power of silence in the depths of God. She is the force, the inevitable word, the magnet of our difficult ascent, the sun from which we kindle all our suns, the light that leans from the unrealized vast, the joy that beckons from the impossible, the might of all that never yet came down. All nature dumbly calls to her alone, to heal with her feet the aching throb of life and break the seals on the dim soul of man. And kindle her fire in the closed heart of things. All here shall be one day her sweetness's home. All contraries prepare her harmony. Towards her our knowledge climbs, our passion gropes. In her miraculous rapture we shall dwell. Her clasp shall turn to ecstasy our pain. Our self shall be one self with all through her. In her confirmed, because transformed in her. Our life shall find in its fulfilled response above the boundless, hushed beatitudes. Below, the wonder of the embrace divine. This known, as in a thunder flash of God, the rapture of things eternal filled his limbs. Amazement fell upon his ravished sense. His spirit was caught in her intolerant flame. Once seen, his heart acknowledged only her. Only a hunger of infinite bliss was left. All aims in her were lost, then found in her. His base was gathered to one pointing spire. Thus was a seed cast into endless time. A word is spoken, or a light is shown, a moment sees, the ages toil to express. So, flashing out of the timeless, leaped the worlds. An eternal instant is the cause of the years. All he had done was to prepare a field. His small beginnings asked for a mighty end. For all that he had been must now new shape in him her joy to embody, to enshrine her beauty and greatness in his house of life. But now his being was too wide for self. His heart's demand had grown immeasurable. His single freedom could not satisfy. Her light, her bliss, he asked for earth and men. But vain are human power and human love to break earth's seal of ignorance and death. His nature's might seemed now an infant's grasp. Heaven is too high for outstretched hands to seize. This light comes not by struggle or by thought. In the mind's silence, the transcendent acts. And the hushed heart hears the unuttered word. A vast surrender was his only strength. A power that lives upon the heights must act. Bring into life's closed room the immortal's air and fill the finite with the infinite. All that denies must be torn out and slain. And crushed the many longings for whose sake we lose the one for whom our lives were made. Now other claims had hushed in him their cry. Only he longed to draw her presence and power into his heart and mind and breathing frame. Only he yearned to call forever down her healing touch of love and truth and joy into the darkness of the suffering world. His soul was freed and given to her alone. This new consciousness is almost ruthless in showing how everything in the mental creation is false, including the reactions that seem spontaneous. In fact, everything is the result of an extraordinarily complex mental construction. We are born in it, and it seems so natural to feel and react according to it, to work out everything according to it, that we walk right past the truth. And this also concerns the very organization of the body. So the action, capital A, appears to assert itself with extraordinary power, which seems merciless to us, so we can learn the lesson. I remember when Sri Aurobindo was here, the being's inner realm felt and saw things according to the higher consciousness in a completely different way. But when Sri Aurobindo broke his leg and fell ill, the body kept saying, "These are dreams, just dreams. It isn't for us, not for the bodies. Bodies are lowly, unfit." It was dreadful. Yet, over time, that feeling disappeared. After many years of effort, it was all gone. The body itself felt the divine presence and became convinced that everything would change accordingly. But these last days, that old formation has returned. It covers the entire humanity, all those who have had the vision, the perception, or only an aspiration toward the higher truth, have had the same experience of this perpetual, painful contradiction of all the external circumstances whenever they came back down to the material level. The body had completely freed itself from that, and now it came back. But when it came back, it saw it as one sees a falsehood. Then I understood how much the body had changed, because it looked at that with a smile, as it were, with the impression of witnessing an old formation devoid of any truth. It was an extraordinary experience. The time of that formation is over. So the pressure of the consciousness, capital C, is there to compel all these things such as they were, petty, miserable, dark, and apparently unavoidable, to disappear in a distant and obsolete past. I actually saw and understood that the work of that consciousness, which seems merciless, careless of how difficult it is, or even possible damage, is meant to change the normal state from this dark, heavy, and ugly predicament to a truer and more luminous status. There is a multiplicity of experiences showing that all is a matter of attitude, and humanity can transcend the mental person in which it is confined and breathe up above. It's the body's experience. In the past, there was the great division created by the mind. Up above, it's fine. You can have all the experiences you wish, and everything is luminous and marvelous. But here, nothing doing. Those who had inner experiences would say, yes, this is true up above, but here, now, the but here will soon be over. There was also this impression that we are born in a world where nothing can change, which is why all those who could not see any possibility for change said, better get out of it. This change, the fact that things are no longer unavoidable, is the great victory. Things are no longer unavoidable. That's what this conquest, This stupendous change is all about. Physical life must be ruled by the higher consciousness and not by the mental world. It is the change of government. It is troublesome, difficult, painful, not without damage. But the results are visible. And the body is learning its lesson. All the bodies. All the bodies. One can feel and see. The body itself experienced it, that soon this very reality will be truer. There is something different in the world. Naturally, it will take time before it settles in for good. Therein lies the battle. Negations are pouring in from all sides, on all levels. To claim that externally, nothing has changed. But that's not true. It isn't true. The body knows it isn't true, and it knows where it is headed. Things must be worked out, as they say, implemented in detail. But the mutation is accomplished. In other words, all the material conditions set by the mind, which appeared so compelling that people who had a living experience of the higher worlds believed one had to abandon this material world in order to live in the truth, are no longer what they appear to be, all the material conditions set by the mind are no longer what they appear to be. The physical is now capable of receiving the higher light, the truth, the true consciousness, and of manifesting it. It is not easy. A lot of endurance and willpower are necessary, but a day will come when it is completely natural. The door is barely ajar. Now we must walk through it. It took a little over a year for this new consciousness to win this victory. And even now, it is only visible to those who have an inner vision. But it's done. Now I understand. This is the work. Sri Aurobindo had given me. No, things are not as they were. They are no longer as they used to be. It still requires a struggle. It is still necessary to have patience, courage, willpower, confidence. But it's no longer business as usual. The old routine is trying to hang on, appallingly, but it's no longer the same. All the circumstances are as catastrophic as ever. Problems, complications, difficulties, it's like a relentless and ferocious assault from all sides. But it's over. The body knows it's over. It may take centuries to disappear, but it's over. There is absolutely no doubt that the very concrete and absolute realization one could experience only by going outside matter will be possible right here.